Today on Bread for the Broken with James Grizzle, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Galveston.
I get so consumed with me and the problems and the things and this thing and now this thing, and I'm not thinking about anybody else. I'm not living for anybody else. But here's Paul. He's like, I just don't value my life that much in that sense. I got to get to these people. And I know what's coming. He knew what was going to happen, which even kind of helps to clarify some of the things that we're going to encounter within the rest of this chapter when he makes vows that he didn't have to make.
In modern Christian culture, a lot of focus is put on personal salvation. Many people are convinced to come to Christ for the sake of their individual soul and its eternal destiny. While this does matter a lot, Pastor James will point out today that your following Jesus is about more than just what it does for you. Can you imagine being willing to give up your place in heaven for the sake of others? The love that we see demonstrated in Paul challenges us to live out Jesus' extreme sacrificial love for others. Now here's Pastor James in the book of Acts chapter 21 with today's edition of Bread for the Broken.
Chapter 21. We'll pick up in verse 15. Just so you understand, this is Paul working his way back to Jerusalem, and everybody's been telling him, like, no, you can't go, you know, trials and tribulations and imprisonment await you. And Paul's like, look, I gotta go. And what everybody's been telling him is something that the Lord had already told him prior to this. He's like, look, the Lord's already communicated to me that chains await me, but I'm bound and determined to get to Jerusalem. This highlights Paul's heart for the Jewish people, for his own brothers and sisters, you know, nationally, I guess you could say. We know from the book of Romans that he had such a heart for the Jewish people that he said that if it were even possible for me to trade places with them eternally, I would do that. Now, I ask you, would you say that same thing about your fellow Americans? Would you say that about maybe political people you don't agree with? You'd be like, look, if I could give you my spot in heaven and take your spot in hell, I would do that. Yeah, right. But that's what Paul said. That's what he said, and I believe that truly was his heart, where he said, look, if I could change places with them, I would. That was his heart for their salvation and his heart for them just to know Jesus. I mean, what a tremendous heart. So of course he has to get to Jerusalem. Of course he's going to go to Jerusalem. He doesn't care if that means he's going to get arrested. That's not even a concern for him. Of course I have to go. Why? Because I love those people so much. That my life, and he even says, he's like, my life means nothing to me if I can win but a few. If I can win but a few, and that's the heart we have to have. We as Christians, we have to have that. For us, I mean, and I feel this sometimes for myself, there's this self-preservation thing of like, I got to take care of me, and I got to make sure that I'm good and all this stuff. And when we're so focused in on that, then we're not really doing anybody any good. Because then I get so consumed with me and the problems and the things and this thing and now this thing, and I'm not thinking about anybody else. I'm not living for anybody else. But here's Paul. He's like, I just don't value my life that much in that sense. I got to get to these people. And I know what's coming. He knew what was going to happen, which even kind of helps to clarify some of the things that we're going to encounter within the rest of this chapter when he makes vows that he didn't have to make. But we have to live our lives this way, okay? So let's look at what is this way? What are we even talking about? Look at verse 15. After these days, I'm reading from a different Bible today. It's the NET, the New English Translation. Let me tell you, I love this translation. This one's really good. You should get it. It's a word-for-word translation. It's so good. All right, there you go. That's enough about that. Don't go looking for problems in it. You'll probably find some. You'll find some problems in all translations, okay? So don't give me any of that stuff. But this one's solid. Verse 15. After these days, we got ready and started up to Jerusalem. You always go up to Jerusalem. I don't care where you're coming from. You always go up to Jerusalem. Geographically, that's true, because Jerusalem's like on a hill, kind of. And so you're always, whether you're coming from the north, the south, the east, or the west, you're always going up to Jerusalem. The Psalms of Ascent, yeah, that would kind of make some sense there, right? Read through those things. You're always going up to Zion, up to Jerusalem. So they're going up to Jerusalem. Verse 16, some of the disciples from Caesarea came along with us too and brought us to the house of Mnason, the of Cyprus, a disciple from the earliest times, a disciple from long ago. One of, like, he goes back probably, definitely, you know, Acts chapter 2 time frame, but maybe even before that, okay? Just an unknown guy, and now he gets a name drop in the book of Acts, which is kind of cool, right? Like, Jesus has given Mnason, if that's how you say his name, could be Nason, I don't know, but you could just give him a little shout out in the book of Acts. This is it for him. And well, what a privilege, right? But they're going to stay with him. It says, with whom we were to stay. When we arrived in Jerusalem, the brothers welcomed us gladly. The next day, Paul went in with us, and this is all the us pronouns. That's anytime you see that where it's plural, us, that's Dr. Luke. Okay, he's including himself, just so you know, clarity-wise. So they go in, they're going to meet with James, and all the elders were there. When Paul had greeted them, he began to explain in detail what God had done, that's key, this is what God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry. That's how it always should be. What God does through you for other people, okay? It's what he does in and through you for other people, vertical. And it has an inward effect, and it always goes outward. It should always go outward. But it should never, like, start inward and then outward, because you don't have much to offer. That's not an insult to you. But whatever you do have stored up to offer to other people, if there's no, like, vertical relationship between you and the Lord, that life supply coming in, this, whatever is in here, will dry out. It won't last. And then you get frustrated, then you get aggravated because things aren't going the way that you think they should, and you just feel like, I just can't do this. And then you start blaming God, and he's like, hey, I didn't move. I never moved. The disconnect, that's on your end. The power's always been there. You just unplugged, right? So Paul is saying, this is what God did through my ministry, okay? You have a ministry. You have a ministry. If you're a Christ follower, you have a ministry. And that, number one, is your life, how you live your life. You don't have to have a nonprofit set up or anything like that. You yourself are a minister because you belong to Jesus, period. You don't need Bible college. You don't need seminary. You don't need any of that stuff. Does it help? Kinda. Yeah, I guess. Sometimes it hurts, but if we're honest, but it doesn't disqualify you if you don't have those things. Because you're a child of God, you're a minister, and you have a ministry. Now, your goal is to tap into what that is and where that is and with whom, you know? Paul got it. It was to the Gentiles. But what God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry, when they heard this, they praised God. Then they said to him, you see, brother, how many thousands of Jews there are who have believed. These are believers. And they are all ardent observers. They're zealous. They're passionate of the law. So they're believers, but they still hold the law pretty tightly. They hold to it pretty tightly. Okay, so I there's this transition that happens there. They're like, oh, Paul, that's so cool. Praise God for what God is doing to you. But now we need you to know something. See, you're in Jerusalem now, and there's all these believers, but they still hold fast to the law, which means there's a problem. There's a problem. That you're here is a problem, okay? So they're going to give them, like, the heads up. Verse 21, they've been informed about you, that you teach all the Jews now living among the Gentiles to abandon Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children or live according to our customs. Just so you know, that's not true. That's not true, okay? If in one sense, yes, maybe abandoning Moses for the sake of Jesus, that's true. That's true. But the issue of circumcision, Paul was very clear about that. Being circumcised does not save you. It does not put you in God's favor. It doesn't. And Paul, he would even go on to say, like, the circumcision that matters the most is that of your heart. That's what matters the most, is that old being cut away and the new kind of blooming in place of it. But this is what's going around. This is what, and everybody who was following after Paul as he went from city to city, town to town, there was this group of Jews that would follow behind him and say, like, look, whatever he's telling you, it's not true. He's trying to lead you astray. There is only one way, and it's through our rituals and through our practices, and you have to be good in order for God to be good with you. That's what they were saying. You have to circumcise your kid. On the eighth day, you better circumcise your kid. If not, they're not good with God. And then you have to eat only these types of foods, and you can't eat the bacon and all that good stuff, because if you do that, then you're not good with God. And the rules and the rules and the rules and the rules and all the stuff. Now, it's made its way into Jerusalem and even amongst some of the Jewish believers. They're being told all this stuff that Paul is not really on the right team, so to speak. He's more of like the enemy than anything else. But this is what's circulating in Jerusalem. Abandoning their customs and all that good stuff. Verse 22, what then should we do? They reply to him. They will no doubt hear that you have come. Verse 23, so do what we tell you, for we have four men who have taken a vow. This is probably a Nazarite vow where they grow their hair out for a certain amount of time. Stay away from grapes and, you know, wine and all that good stuff, right? These four guys have already started this vow. So what they want him to do is to jump in with them, so to speak. Four men who have taken a vow, verse 24, take them and purify yourself among them and pay their expenses so that they may have their heads shaved. Then everyone will know that there is nothing in what they have been told about you, but what you yourself live in, or that you yourself live in conformity with the law. But regarding the Gentiles who have believed, we have written a letter. This goes back to Acts chapter 15 or 16. We've written a letter having decided that they should avoid meat that has been sacrificed to idols, avoid blood, anything with blood, that and what has been strangled, and sexual immorality, right? So here, James and the leaders of the Jerusalem church say, okay, Paul, here's the deal. You're kind of in hostile territory right now. Because these guys think that you don't respect the law. And by not respecting the law, that means that you don't respect God. And so we have these four guys who have already taken this Nazarite vow, and they're probably already 2 weeks into this thing. And they're like, look, we just want you to, you jump in with them, you pay their expenses. And Paul's like, seriously? Like, no, you pay for their expenses and all this stuff, and you join in on that purification thing, just so people can see that you actually care about these things. Did Paul have to do this? No. No. He didn't have to. He could have been like, what are you guys talking about? I don't have to do this, and I don't care what they think. But he did it. He did it. Why would he do this? Because Paul cared about being all things to all men so that he may win some. That's what he said in the book, in the letter to the church of Corinth. I will become all things to all men so that I might win some. You want me to pay for their haircut? Cool, I'll pay for their haircut. You want me to do the purification thing? Because it's not really, this isn't an issue of salvation. I think Paul's like, fine, I'll do that. Whatever it takes, I don't care. It doesn't mean that much to me. If this is what they need, then I'll do that. Please know that when you become all things to all men, it doesn't mean that you join in with all men and their sin. Okay? I can't even believe sometimes we have to say these things. But we do. Because we take things and we take them to this extreme or to that extreme. And there are two extremes. There's complete isolation from the world, which is not biblical. And then there's complete indulgence into the world, which is not biblical. Okay? So we're like, no, I got to go to the bars and throw back a few and all that stuff so I could be all things to all men. You don't understand what that verse talks about. You don't understand what it is. It's not an issue of alcohol, whether or not you can drink alcohol. It's how you are willing to lay aside freedoms that you have in order to win others to the Lord. Who cares if you have the right to drink? Who cares? Throw one back, but you don't know who's watching you that may have been freed from alcoholism for so many years, and they see that, and they're like, oh, well, that dude can drink, so then I guess I can. We have to function in a whole nother realm. When you are a minister, you represent Jesus. Paul had this, he had this where he's like, look, if I'm around people and they don't eat meat, guess what? I don't eat meat either. It's not a big deal. It's one meal. Who cares? No, but that's my right. That's my right. I'm going to die. You're what, going to die on the hill of whether or not you should eat certain meats? Are you kidding me? You're going to die on a hill of whether or not you should drink alcohol or not? Are you kidding me? When people are going to heaven and people are going to hell. And we want to live and die on certain hills. And it's like, this is nonsense. Paul's like, look, okay, this isn't an issue of salvation. So I'll pay for their haircuts. I'll do the purity thing. That's fine. I don't mind doing it. It doesn't work. It didn't work. Whatever they hoped, it did not work. But Paul was like, sure. Why? Well, because I will, to the Jew, I'm a Jew. To the Gentile, I'm a Gentile. He just knew how to lay aside his freedoms and his quote-unquote rights for the sake of souls. We have to do the same thing. We have to be willing to do the same thing. And that kind of mentality never leads you into, should never lead you into sin. Should never lead you into sin. Because you're consulting the Lord before you walk out the door, and you know, like, okay, I'm going to be around these people. Man, they don't have a relationship with the Lord, and all they do is talk about this stuff, and I don't want to talk about that stuff anymore. But Lord, this is the scenario. This is my work environment. This is what I'm walking into Monday through Friday. So Lord, help me to minister to them, to have the right words to say at the right time, and to let my speech be seasoned with grace so that they see, well, why are you so different? Why don't you talk like us? Why don't you join in with us in the after work activities? That's just not who I am. That's not who I am. I'll hang out with you. I'll have a conversation with you. You know, but it only goes to a certain extent. But I'm not going to shut myself off from the world because, oh, you know, you're bad people. It's the bad people who need Christians. It's the lost people who need Jesus. And we have them. And we have them. So be willing and consult the Lord. Lord, what am I holding on to that may actually be a hindrance in me sharing your gospel with somebody? And you got to be, and we talk about this all the time, but you got to be, you know, wise as serpents and gentle as doves. You just have to be smart. You have to use your brain. God gave you a brain. So just fill it with the Bible. Fill it with the Word. You know, your brain and hopefully your heart, because that's what's more important there. But then just run everything through the Jesus filter. Lord, does this please you? Will this please you? Will you be glorified if I do this or that? If it makes it through the filter, then go for it. If he says, like, nah, I really don't want you to do that, then just don't do it. Paul's like, what does it matter to me if I pay for these four dudes' haircuts? What does it matter to me? Do I need this purification thing? No, I don't. Paul would have said it. He's like, I don't need this. Well, you've been traveling around in Gentile cities, so you need to wash the filth off of you because now you're in the Holy Land. This is what they would, part of why they would do this. And Paul would have been like, dude, it all belongs to the Lord. The land all belongs to him. None of it's filthier than any other place. You get just as dirty trekking through Jerusalem as you do in Las Vegas, right? You can get mud on you going, you know, hypothetically speaking, going into any city. Paul's like, I'm not dirty. I've been working. I'm not impure. I've been serving. But if you want me to do this, fine, I'll do it. And he does it. And that's, I think, again, this is just a good lesson, I think, for us as churchgoers and believers is like, look, you got to have boundaries. You know, if you know, like, going to this area or that area or whatever may lead you into sin, or then don't go. then don't go. Come on, just don't go. But then find out where else you can go for the sake of the gospel. Because we have this light inside of us, and we're expected to go and to share this anywhere, everywhere, with anybody. And Christians would do really well to lay aside some of your freedoms for the sake of other people's eternity. Not that you're going to save them, but I think if we stop like making these open-handed issues such like big deals, just be like, no, what's the big, Jesus is the big deal. We never move on that. We never move on his word. We don't move on things like the fact that he literally physically died on a cross and that he literally physically rose from the grave 3 days later. We don't budge on those things. But some of these other things, okay, whatever. Whatever. It just, Paul's mentality, what he models here, I think it's just, it just hopefully is an encouragement to all of us. It's like, yeah, so what does he do? Verse 26, Paul took them in the next day. There's no argument from Paul. We don't have any record of him arguing and saying like, no, look, here's what you guys need to understand. I have freedom and liberty in Christ, and I don't have to do these things anymore. And he would be right. But some battles are just not worth fighting in that sense. He's going to pick his battles. He's like, okay, next day, purified himself along with them. He went to the temple, gave notice of the completion of the days of purification, when the sacrifice would be offered for each of them. When the 7 days were almost over, the Jews of the province of Asia, who had seen him in the temple area, stirred up the whole crowd and seized him. He's like, see, it didn't work. You know, he's like, I'll do it. That's fine. It did not work. It didn't work. Maybe it worked with some. Maybe some of the Jews there. And that's the thing. Oftentimes, you know, like Paul here, he laid aside maybe his right or his freedom in the Lord. And maybe he wasn't aware of some of the other believers that saw that and were like, oh, okay, he's a good guy, right? He maybe was used to encourage. We have no record of that. All we do know is that these other troublemakers show up and they're like, that's a bad guy. Get him. And they get him. They seize him. They grab hold of him. Verse 28, shouting, men of Israel, help. This is the man who teaches everyone everywhere against our people. See, that's key. Against our people. Now, they'll specify it. You can see there, our law and this sanctuary. Now, it can be implied that their concern is for God, but it is not stated. They had three chances, and it was never stated. Our people, our law, our sanctuary, our church. Not God's people, not God's law, not God's church. This is solely about them. He is messing up. Just like Jesus showed up in Jerusalem and messed up their whole religious system, now Paul is doing the same thing. And what you see happen next should bring back all sorts of memories from the gospel accounts of Jesus being arrested and standing before Pilate in a trial and all the Jews shouting out the same stuff that they're going to shout out concerning Paul. Furthermore, that verse goes on, he has brought Greeks or Gentiles into the inner courts of the temple and made this holy place ritually unclean. This is a big accusation. Now they're like, look, we can't even go to church anymore because he messed it up, because he brought in Gentile scum. The hopeless, hopeless,
red for the broken. That's all we have time for today at Bread for the Broken, but we're so glad that you joined us as Pastor James continues through the book of Acts. This book is a powerful representation of how the church first began. It contains a variety of snapshots into effective ways of sharing the gospel. Some apostles shared in large groups, while others taught in more intimate settings. Some taught the gospel through words, and others shared through signs and wonders. Do you wrestle with sharing who Jesus is? Be encouraged. As long as you're teaching the hope and truth of Jesus, there is no wrong way. If you'd like prayer in this area, we would love to pray for you. Visit breadforthebroken.com, click on the contact tab, and let us know how we can be praying. If you'd like to listen to more teachings like this, you can find them too when you visit breadforthebroken.com. Just click on the teachings tab. You'll also be able to learn more about Calvary Galveston at our website, as well as find directions to our location. Calvary Galveston is a church of ordinary people seeking to live as Jesus did. We meet every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. and Wednesdays at 7 p.m. So if you're ever in the Galveston area, we would love to meet you. Our atmosphere is relaxed, so just come as you are. You can find out more and get directions on our website. Again, that's breadforthebroken.com. Thanks for listening to Pastor James's teaching today. Know that we're praying for you, and we hope you'll join us to continue digging into the book of Acts next time on Bread for the Broken. Let me paint the picture of you.